Radio Prague News.
Former Transport Minister and head of the Junior Coalition's Public Affairs Parliamentary Group, Vít Bárta, is standing trial for corruption at a Prague district court on Monday. Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg has praised the newly elected Russian President Vladimir Putin, stating he had prepared well for the elections. And as the Temelín bid is entering its final phase, the French industrial conglomerate Areva has signed contracts over future collaboration with 14 Czech firms. Former Transport Minister and head of the Junior Coalition Party Public Affairs Parliamentary Group, Vít Bárta, is standing trial for corruption at a Prague district court on Monday. Mr. Bárta is suspected of having bought the loyalty of at least two former party members, Kristýna Kocsi and Jaroslav Škárka, to whom he handed over large sums of money in cash. While Vít Bárta admits to having given them money, he claims the transactions were personal loans. If found guilty, Mr. Bárta, widely perceived as the party's de facto leader, could face a sentence of up to 6 years. Jaroslav Škárka is also being tried for accepting the bribe. Commenting on the presidential elections in Russia, the head of the Czech Foreign Ministry, Karel Schwarzenberg, said that Vladimir Putin's victory was not surprising. Everything had gone according to plan and Mr. Putin deserved congratulations, he said. He added that the result would not affect Czech-Russian relations. The opposition Social Democrats have criticized the way the elections were held. The party's shadow Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek expressed concerns over suspected irregularities at the polls. The French multinational industrial conglomerate Areva has signed contracts over future collaboration with 14 Czech companies who would be its subcontractors in the case that Areva wins the bid for the completion of a new reactor at the Temelín nuclear plant. Among Areva's new partners are the Vítkovice Machinery Group and Schneider Electric ZZ. Other contenders for the Temelín completion bid had signed similar cooperation agreements in the past months. The tender over the nuclear power plant completion is now in its final phase. Areva is one of three bidders in the multi-billion tender to build new reactors at the Temelín plant, along with the American Westinghouse and the Russian state enterprise Atomstroy Export. The total cost of the two new reactors for Temelín is expected to reach roughly 150 billion Czech crowns. And now let's take a brief look at the weather. Monday is expected to be partly cloudy with showers in places and daytime temperatures between 4 and 8 degrees. My name is Sarah Barufka and this brings us to the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Today, the de facto head of the Public Affairs Party, Vít Bárta, goes on trial on charges of corruption. After that, we'll have a rundown of the news in the week in sports. And later on in this week's one-on-one, we talk to one of the students protesting the government's education reforms, Matoš Turek. I hope you'll be staying with us today for all that and more here on Radio Prague. The Junior Coalition Party Public Affairs, which won seats in Parliament on a strong anti-corruption agenda, is facing a major test of its credibility. The party's de facto leader, former transport minister and present head of the party's parliamentary group in the lower house, Vít Bárta, is standing trial on charges of corruption. The court hearings, which began on Monday, will hear testimony from ministers and MPs, and the outcome of the much-anticipated trial could shake the party to its foundations. Daniela Lazarova has the story.
The Prague 5 District Court, which is dealing with a highly anticipated court case, was besieged by journalists since the early hours on Monday. The central figure in the case, former head of the ABL security firm Vid Bharta, is widely seen as the party's de facto leader. The man who financed it, masterminded its success in the 2010 general elections, and who rules it with an iron hand to this day. Although Mr. Bharta was forced to step down as transport minister after two party members accused him of having bought their loyalty with large sums of money, the party has kept him in a high-profile position to this day. The public affairs multimillionaire who promised voters to sweep out widespread corruption is suspected of bribing at least two now former party members, Kristina Koci and Jaroslav Škarka, to whom he handed over large sums of money in cash. Although Vid Bharta does not deny this, he says the money, for which he did not even request a slip, was given as a loan to people whom he considered to be close friends. Now he says his name was tarnished by rebels who are planning a party putsch, and he welcomes the chance to clear his name in court.
I said from the moment that these allegations surfaced that the only way to clear my name would be in court. I am looking forward to the trial and hope the state attorney does not prolong matters so that the trial can begin as soon as possible.
His former party colleagues Kristina Koci and Jaroslav Škarka, who claim that Bharta runs the party with an iron hand and treats members as puppets, are equally determined to make the truth known. Jaroslav Škarka, who himself is to be tried for having spent part of the money which he allegedly received as a bribe and reporting it late, says the party has a unique opportunity to cleanse itself.
Party members testifying here have a unique opportunity to tell the truth, and by doing so to cleanse the party and themselves of the dubious practices that are being implemented in it.
Among those who will be taking the stand as witnesses are ministers and MPs. Deputy Prime Minister Karolina Pík, one of the party's leading lights who paradoxically manages the government's anti-corruption portfolio, will also be present at the trial. She says it is important to keep the case in the right perspective.
It is not the Public Affairs Party which is on trial here, as some have tried to present the case. This is a dispute between three people which has ended up in court.
Although the party's official head, Radek Jón, has also welcomed the trial as the only way to end months of speculation about alleged power practices within the party, it is clear that the negative publicity surrounding this court case will deliver another blow to the party's already flagging public trust.
Many thanks to Daniela Lazarová. This is Radio Prague. Much more coming up in the program, but first, as always of a Monday, we have the news from the week in sports, compiled for you on this occasion by Dominic Yoon.
Two of the most prominent Czech tennis players have held on to their world rankings ahead of the upcoming BNP Paribas Open to be held this week in Indian Wells, California. 21-year-old 2011 Wimbledon winner Petra Kvitová maintains her number 3 ranking, while the 26-year-old 2012 Wimbledon finalist Tomáš Berdych remains at number 7. Berdych failed last week to advance beyond the quarterfinals of the Dubai Tennis Championships, having reached the semifinals the previous year, but still maintains a significant points lead in the rankings against world number 8 Mardy Fish. Meanwhile, Kvitová, who has been out of action during most of February with a sprained Achilles heel, is marking her return to professional tennis since competing in the Fed Cup in early February. Saturday saw FC Victoria Plzeň defeat Sparta 3-1 in an away game that saw the winners renew, albeit still distant, hopes of emerging as this year's Gambrinus Liga champions. Currently, Plzeň are in third place with 37 points, while Sparta continue to top the table with 43 points. The home defeat led to Sparta team captain Marek Matejovský trying to rally the spirits of his team after conceding two goals early in the match, before coming back in the 15th minute to make it 2-1. However, the result was sealed with a 59th minute goal by Plzeň. This is the second match in a row in which Sparta have come away without a single league table point, with second place Liberec now just 3 points away from topping the table. Staying with the Gambrinus Liga, Sigma Olomouc beat Viktoria Žižkov 2-1, with both goals coming from Adam Varadi in the 69th and 75th minutes, while Pavel Jurčo scored one goal for Žižkov in the 81st minute. The match represents Žižkov's ninth defeat in a row. Meanwhile, Slavia's woes continued with a 2-3 defeat to FK Mladá Boleslav. Boleslav and Slavia both managed to score two goals before the halftime whistle, with Slavia continuously playing catch-up, but a 71st-minute goal by Ondřej Zahustel for Boleslav proved decisive, and the team almost secured a fourth goal in the 81st minute with a strike from Jan Chramosta, which ended up being deflected by a Slavia player. HC Ocelář Trnec will play a fifth match against PSG Zlín in the Extraliga ice hockey playoffs after the four-match round failed to produce a winner. The fourth match on Sunday saw Zlín defeat Trnec 2-1, meaning that each team has won two matches each. The playoffs consist of a series of four matches played between each of the 14 contesting teams, two at home and two away. The 2-1 match was the fourth between the teams, meaning that a fifth decider will now be required to determine which team advances into the quarterfinals. The decisive match will take place on Tuesday. And staying with the sport, Plzeň-born ice hockey player Petr Sikora's hopes of celebrating in style his 1,000th professional match ended in disappointment with a 1-0 loss by his NHL team, the New Jersey Devils, on Sunday to the New York Islanders. When Sikora returned to the Devils in 2011, having previously played for them from 1996 to 2002, the player was just 65 matches shy of reaching his 1,000th match. In 2010, the player faced hip surgery before playing in Russia and his native Czech Republic again. Speaking after the match, Sikora said that it was, quote, disappointing the way it ended up, and also added that he still really enjoyed the game, but obviously I was disappointed with the result, he added. And that's the sport.
Dominic Yoon there with the news from the week in sports. And we stay with Dominic now for the next of our interview program, One-on-One. We'll hear from the student movement that is protesting wide-ranging reforms promised by the Education Ministry.
My guest today is Matoš Turek, a member of the Week of Unrest student group that's protesting during the end of February proposed government reforms to the education system. So, Matoš, what exactly are the reforms that the government are proposing and what don't you like about them?
There are two drafts. One draft is concerning the autonomy of universities, how they are to be governed, and the other one, the financing part. It's called the financial help to the students, which is kind of a funny title, I would say. So it introduces changes to the autonomy, which means that there is a different system of governing the schools altogether. As of now, academic senates are the governing principle of schools, of universities around the country. And then you have a rector. And now the academic senates should lose most of their, well, I could say privileges, but it's basically their rights. And the academic senates are elected by the academia. So now it should be the board of directors, the so-called board of directors, or the university council, as it is labeled, who should decide about especially budget matters, which...
And this is something you feel that would give the government extra influence over universities? How would it reduce the autonomy of universities?
It surely would, because one third of the board of directors should be appointed directly by the Minister of Education. Also, the government should confirm the selection of the board of directors. So there is direct political influence upon the governing bodies of the universities, which is something unheard of in civilized countries, I would say.
And the second part of the proposals is to do with the way that universities are financed. And there's been a proposal to introduce, I think, capped fees of around 10,000 crowns or something like that. Is that correct?
That's right. There has been some talk about that. It should be changed as of now, but we don't know yet. It's mostly words and no assurances. But now the financing from the state goes through a so-called normative. So you have amount that goes per student. It's multiplied by a coefficient, which is higher for technical universities, lower for humanities. And a historical point is that this led the universities to take many more students, many more applicants. And this was endorsed by the government, and it has been endorsed up until now. And now the government has realized that it's not tenable, that we can't have so many students, which is perhaps true, and it makes sense. We have many more students by percentage in the population than we had 10 years ago.
So the reforms would actually serve to reduce the number of students?
They probably would, but...
And that's a good thing, because obviously you get a lot of debate these days that in order to compete with China and all the rest of it, we need to educate our populations, and you're saying that there maybe are too many students?
Well, economically, there are just too many universities and students. If you look at the number of private universities, which is a different matter, but the number of university-educated people is going up as well. The quality of the education is a problem, and it's not possible to be funded in such scale. But the real problem is that the private universities are not regulated in any way. So you have the public sector, which is pressurized by this legislation, but the private universities are not talked of at all in the drafts.
So right now, education for students is free. The proposals would seek to what you would presumably view as opening the door to fees, which once the door is open, they can go up any time. So is this something you're fundamentally opposed to, the idea of student fees and indebting students?
The big question is whether we want to lower the number of students on the basis of their intellect, on the basis of their income. And that's what the government has all wrong, I think, and we think together. Because if you introduce fees, which wouldn't be nominal, I think that a lot of the student activists are not against nominal fees, paid as you go, not after you earn some money. Debts are not the way to go, as we have seen in England and in other countries. So we would accept if quality really was the thing that decided how many students get into the universities and who gets there, and not the thought of, okay, I have to pay off 100,000 crowns after I finish.
So how would students pay this? Do the reforms mention anything about some sort of student loan mechanism or something like that?
Yeah, that's the part. The financing law is concerned most with the loans. The loans should be guaranteed by the state, but they should be guaranteed to the banks. So the banks get steady interest rates, which should be paid for by the government. And once a former student attains, I think, 2 times the minimum wage, he starts paying off himself, which is quite strange, because double the minimum wage is much less than had been proposed before. That's not a lot of money, actually. The reason why Jozef Dobeš, the minister, says the fees are justified is that the students should not expect the society to pay for their own privileges. But we see educated society as an absolute must in the world. And if you make people pay for their education, you're going to exclude a whole lot of people who might not think that they may pay it.
So when you look at something like the British example, where a few years ago they changed the system from free education to paid education, one of the criticisms of those reforms has been that it actually hurts the middle classes the most, because the poor get subsidies, the rich, no problem, and ultimately it's the middle class that suffers. What's your take on the British example? Is that something you're suspicious of?
I think that in Britain there is a greater rate of trust in institutions. So scholarships and financial help is somehow managed in a tenable way. Here, we don't think that that's going to be the case. So not only the middle classes, but also the lower classes. It's more of a psychological barrier in some sense, that you first make people think about the money and only then about education. And the education should come first.
Is not the present merit-based system also open to corruption? Because you sometimes hear a lot about various universities admitting somebody because they're the friend's sister's uncle's brother and all that sort of thing. That's quite common in the Czech Republic. How would you reform that?
Okay, that problem is a great problem, you're right. And actually, the Rector's Conference and the Student Initiative has criticized the drafts that they do not take on this problem anyhow, really. And we are definitely for an analysis of the system, how it works. because there has not been a real analysis of the financing nor of the actual working of the universities. So it might be dealt with in the future, and it should be dealt with, but the drafts don't mention it. One thing that could help is a quality control from the Accreditation Commission, which now is taking place in Pilsen, for instance. I think that the Pilsen law faculty crisis is quite known. There have been students who received their diplomas without any effort. So the Accreditation Commission has decided to shut the whole faculty. But now there are efforts from the government, from the Minister of Education, to halt this, which is absurd. We are all for quality control. There is no question in that.
And we're recording this interview one day after 10 rough, well, students say 10,000, police say 7,000, but obviously a lot of students marched on the offices of the Czech government yesterday, and that resulted in the Prime Minister, Petr Nečas, saying that he was now willing to negotiate with students over the proposed reforms. So it looks like what was initially proposed is now politically untenable, and that there are going to be talks. So are you hopeful that you've had an impact? This has been quite a huge sort of PR effort, hasn't it?
Actually, it has. We are quite happy with that, especially with how many people have turned up, because it was in the morning, and altogether, throughout Czech Republic, 20,000 people, mostly students, have come out into the streets, and there have been many more events, like the University Night. I have been there, and I saw that there weren't only students. There were people who came to actually learn something about the drafts, about the initiative. So I think it has had a PR effect, especially on the population, which otherwise wouldn't have to care.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, because sometimes you hear critiques that young people are just apathetic. They don't get involved enough. So is this as fired up as young people have been politically since, you know, 1989?
Yes. The students have realized that it's them who should care about the universities. It's on the basic level of what's going to happen to me in the next few years. So there is a question about the future. And I think that's a change, because the system has been sort of stale, you could say. So in that respect, we have to thank Josef Dobeš.
One last question, very briefly. Since, obviously, students were so involved with the Velvet Revolution, the optics of a government upsetting students is still quite a powerful one. Is that correct?
It is.
You get the public on your side. Quite
yes.
Easily.
I don't think it's that easy, because if you look at the media reports, I think that the government, up until the students have come out, have quite easily, I don't know if the word manipulated is the correct one, but I would say so. The public opinion, in a way such as that, the academia are vying for their own private interests. The president has said this. He has refused to give a lecture, which had been scheduled for months in Brno at Masaryk University, because of the protests. And I think there is a big no from the society to this. And that's really something we appreciate.
Matouš Turek, member of Week of Unrest, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
If you're just tuning in, then thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. Topping off our show for today is the next edition of our language learning series, The ABCs of Czech, brought to you by Pavla Horáková and Vladimír Tax.
Welcome to the last episode of our Czech language series, Czech from Head to Toe. Today's body part is the legs, and also feet, as popular Czech uses just one word for both.
Noha.
And in the plural?
Nohy.
The number of idioms using these words is overwhelming, so we'll go through just a few of them. My favorite is...
Lež má krátké nohy.
Literally, a lie has short legs, meaning it won't run far before it's caught. Our forefathers were such optimists to think every liar would eventually be caught, even if he decided to...
Vzít nohy na ramena.
Literally, to take his legs on his shoulders, or to take to his heels in proper English. About young people who are tall, thin and gawky, Czechs say they are...
Samá ruka, samá noha.
All arms and legs. When they overcome that embarrassing stage, It is important for them to
postavit se na vlastní nohy.
To stand on their own two feet, to become financially independent. Sometimes the easiest way is to
skočit do toho rovnýma nohama.
Jump in with straight legs. Jump in at the deep end. Plunge into it. But it is dangerous to overestimate one's financial status and
žít na vysoké noze.
To live on a high leg. Or to live like a lord. Spend more than you can afford. Sooner or later, it's possible to say about such people
hoří mu půda pod nohama.
The ground is burning under his feet. Or things are getting too hot for him. Or they can lose the ground beneath their feet altogether.
Ztratit půdu pod nohama.
So that's all for today, I'm afraid, but you can join us next time for another edition of the ABC of Czech. Until then, it's goodbye.
Naschledanou.
That was Pavla Horáková and Vladimír Tax with the ABCs of Czech, wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. Don't forget that this program and every other is available at our internet address, radio.cz. If you have any questions or comments, we are always glad to hear them. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or of course by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.